You know, the media really borders on treason. Probably crossed the border in a couple of cases. They will not bow to anyone or any opinion or any view other than their own. All the polls show the majority of America is behind the president. To everybody's surprise, Congress voted the power to the president. So the media is going to see how many people they can find, if they have to go through 1,000 to 1 until they find somebody that can badmouth the war and peddle fear and feature them. They don't care if it's a 10-year-old kid. Now, the scripture says God is not the author of fear. So, where do you think they're getting their message? That's what I've been telling you for a long, long time, haven't I? I heard Brian Gimbel with his squeaky little peanut vendor voice telling us how many days the Air Force is going to pound before the soldiers move in, pulling in all the military experts they can to explain how terrible it's going to be. I mean, there is a time to just shut up, and the media doesn't know it. I mean, they have undermined every value in America. Nobody is to be tried twice for the same offense. A trial by your jury does not prove you're guilty or innocent. It just determines whether or not you'll be held guilty or innocent. If you're held innocent, you have a right for the media to not keep the trial going. But if they pre-tried it in the media and decided you were guilty and the jury doesn't go along with them, they'll bury the jury's decision and continue to promote the guilt. I mean, I've heard John Chancellor give some bad reviews. I mean, it's hard to find anybody can give him as bad as he can give. But tonight had to top them all. A decision has been made. No president in the history of America has went the first, second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth, ninth, tenth mile to the degree that George Bush is gone. And now the same media that branded him a wimp are calling him a warmonger. You know, they live with idiot cards so long that when you turn them over, they don't remember what was on the other side, that they don't think America can remember the songs they sang previously. Now that the Secretary General of the United Nations has finished his last-ditch effort, and the reward is to have Saddam say he has a new weapon, which is a, you know, a bunch of BS. I mean, if it is, it ain't going to match the weapons. We probably got 50 you don't know about. And now that the Secretary General has failed because of the stubborn intransigence of Saddam, you'd think they'd shut up. We only have 48 hours on their clock. By the way, it is not 12:01 midnight, the 15th California time. to Iraqi time. Less than 48 hours to go. And all the media is trying to do with the decision made. I mean, think about it. The decision is made. And the only possible hopes of peace is to scare the fiddly out of Saddam, convince him that America's united, and unite in the message that the bullet's been bitten and he's the only one that can stop it. But in an intensive attempt to demoralize America and encourage Saddam, whom all the experts agree is willing even to risk war and the losses entailed on his people, because he doesn't care a whit about his people. He doesn't care if 90% of them are wiped out if he's preserved. The one thing he believes is he will emerge victorious because America doesn't have the will to wage war. So the media is feeding that. And now 60 Minutes and NBC and the networks are determined to terrorize us worldwide with threats of terrorism. I mean, if Saddam hadn't already thought of it, he has now. And the media assumes this isolationist that's advised by five family members that hasn't been out of Iraq in so long he probably doesn't know the way to the border. Assume he knows everything. So there's no risk to show the department stores and the public buildings on TV and the crowded subways as the best targets for terrorism, even if he already knows them. Even if you assume he's got a map and a plan laid out, it's grossly immoral, callously indifferent to human life, and borders on a blood brother mentality to Saddam Hussein to compete for the ratings by standing in crowded subways and showing the fronts of public and department store buildings as the best targets for terrorism. Fear. A premeditated, unrelenting propaganda campaign to terrorize America and break their will until we're unable to wage war. I mentioned Tokyo Rose the other night. She is the textbook case of demoralizing propaganda. You can study her techniques and her messages, and the current media approach is identical. This may be the first war that the enemy doesn't have to hire a propaganda machine. It's already in place. Rare, very rare exceptions. I mean, one of the great tragedies that ever happened, I don't give a hoot or a holler what your racist issues are. I don't give a hoot or a holler. I don't care who I make mad in saying this. Andy Rooney was not a racist. That was a highly publicized, callous attempt to destroy a man who made an innocent remark taken out of context, twisted to reflect a racist view. I mean, I know a racist when I see one. Andy Rooney, not a racist. He's a conservative, but he's not a racist. His so-called anti-minority view, not near as biased as the anti-majority view of those who came against him. There's two sides to any story. He is a rare exception. And tonight, his commentary was the only breath of fresh air on the media the whole day. Wonder the rest of his lily liberals didn't shoot him on the way out. Maybe we'll go check and see. Because his was the last remarks on the program. But he was complaining about the generals saying we're not ready. He pointed out Washington wasn't ready. I can point out he sure wasn't ready after Valley Forge. Eisenhower wasn't ready. He could have used a few more months to prepare for D-Day. Those guys really weren't ready. But he says of our troops, if we're not ready, why aren't we? $4 trillion over the last 40 years to fight Russia with 300 million people. And we're not ready to fight this little tin-horn country with 17 million people and about the size of two of our smaller states. If we're not ready, he said, then there's some explaining to do, and they better give back the $4 trillion, which amounts to, I like this, $16,000 for every man, woman, and child in America. Yeah. Now, I'd just soon keep my 16 and stuff it up some delicate orifice of Saddam Hussein. But all this demoralizing talk, the minefields, we have weapons now that can detonate the mines. It's not the jungle. There's never been a more ideal. If war can be called ideal, there's never been a more ideal environment for a technical war. They can't hide in the jungle. They can't be cave rats. We have weapons that can detonate the mines. If they pour oil in the trenches and set them on fire, as has been threatened with much shaking by the media of how terrible that'll be. We have weapons. We have tanks that have equipment that can see through the smoke, and the Iraqis don't. So if they burn the trenches, they'll be the sitting ducks, not the other way around. What if Israel comes in? Big. Big fiddle indeed. We lose 5,000 of serious troops. Who might just be there so they can turn on us in the midst of the battle anyway. I mean, Syria's worth about as much as an extra tit on a cow's udder for this war. In fact, 5,000 cows could probably do more than Syrians will do. Israel could wipe out Saddam by herself alone and take Jordan out in the process and Syria while they were going by. Like it or lump it, choose up sides, either side you want. The facts of history are clear. If that were not the case, Israel would already have been wiped out by both Syria and Iraq. Israel put a bomb down a smokestack of his attempted nuclear factory, and what did they do about it? Nothing. I remember the counts of how many Syrian warplanes were shot down to zero for Israel. And the media tell us that Iraq has 4,000 tanks. How do they know that? And how many of them run? I mean, drive up to Vallejo and figure out how many ships we got. We got more ships sitting in the bay up there in San Francisco Harbor than Iraq's got tanks. We've been preparing for 40 years to fight the most powerful army of Europe with nuclear weapons. They have. Britain's already said if they use poison gas, Britain will nuke them. And they probably will. I think Major was trained pretty well by the old Iron Lady. So who cares about Assad? He's probably going to move in. He's only in the war because he thinks he can get something out of it. He's not there for principle. Who cares about him? Planes we have based in Turkey could wipe him out. I mean, not only is the media peddling fear, they're peddling lies to promote fear. If terrorism is the ultimate weapon, so-called, of Saddam, that's why we should take him out. I mean, what is all this talk? We sat through the hostages in Iran. We've seen the world held captive by terrorists, and everybody has screamed, what are we going to do about it? Now all the leading terrorists in the world are gathered in Baghdad. Hell, drop the bomb tonight before they leave. Yeah. Never has there been a focus on the leadership of terrorism until this moment. Iraq. Declaring war on the world by dispensing and dispersing terrorists and terrorism around the world. That's probably, forget oil, forget baby killing in Kuwait, forget the boundaries of Kuwait, forget any and every other reason for war. That alone, that the media is shaken about, should stiffen the back of America and give us the best reason for the 400,000 going in. I'm also sick to my stomach of the media being selective in whom they promote in the religious world. If a charismatic Pentecostal or fundamentalist evangelist rides in a single-engine Piper Cub, they investigate him to death. Pope can ride, truck around a $100,000 automobile to wade through, and fly in jets, 727s, and they call it Shepherd One. I want to tell you, the 8 or 10 clergymen they're able to find in every city, that are cut from the same cloth as the cowardly clergyman that could have stopped Adolf Hitler, but didn't in Nazi Germany, do not represent the bulk of religious America. Every poll shows the depth of Bible-believing Americans, and that means that if the polls show a majority of the people are behind the president, those same polls include a majority of Christians in America. I'm tired of the media using religion when it serves their purpose and telling us to keep our mouth shut and hide behind our four walls and let them do all the talking for America when we happen to disagree with what the media is saying. All they've done is feature cowardly preachers with peace at any cost, false prophet messages on TV. I happen to believe that I'm not the only preacher in the world that says, hooray for our good Christian president who said he was going to kick Saddam's ass. And I'm still saying, write the president and say, not all preachers are against you. There are just a lot of us that have faith in God, are going to heaven, believe in love and receive God's love, but recognize there's some snakes you ought to kill. Most Christians are like a guy going down the path, and the snake was cold, and the snake began to beg him to pick him up and carry him. And he said, but you're a snake. You'll bite me. No, I won't. I'm cold. I need to be warmed. You pick me up and you hold me. I won't bite you. So he picked him up and carried him. The snake warmed up and bit him. And as he was dying, he said, you promised not to bite me. The snake said, you knew I was a snake when you picked me up. Christianity does not automatically make you incapable of recognizing snakes that need to be killed. And peace will come to this world when Jesus comes on a white horse with a sword out of his mouth, killing them in the plain of Megiddo. Not simple moral homilies and bootlicking prostrations in the presence of every ten-horned tyrant that comes along and says, you're a Christian, you've got to love me. I'm a Christian, and I hate Saddam. I don't even love his soul. I know where it's going. When people try to tell me that their God is on their side when all that they're doing is evil, then it's time to say back, well, the record of history shows the God on our side is one more often than yours. And it's going to come out the same way this time around if America will quit listening to the Benedict Arnold of the press. Now go on telephone. Now don't stop taking calls. Just keep your voice down because I'm going to do a little talking too. We are wiring the world for sound. We're right in the middle of the process.
part of it is making available to all of you in the United States an option to listen by shortwave radio. Now, some people are simply dated on shortwave. They can only think of squawk boxes like those that were listened to during the Second World War. You can buy shortwave radios that will bring in the sound just as clear as any AM or FM radio. And we are on shortwave to give you an alternative by radio, not just in Los Angeles, all over this nation, clear down to Chile, all through Mexico and Central America and South America. And you can pick us up on 9785. 9785. I'm looking for a particular call here. Yeah, from Redwood City, California. I've been wondering how it was picked up north, because that's kind of on the edge of the signal, since the transmitter's out here in Simi Valley. But Redwood City says the shortwave signal is beautiful now, clear as a bell, right now in Redwood City. It'll be just that clear in the Caribbean, just that clear all across Mexico, just that clear up into Toronto, all over this United States, and just that clear all over Los Angeles. You can pick us up every night from 8 p.m. to midnight on 9785 on your shortwave radio dial. What are we on, the 31-meter band? 31-meter band, 9785. Now, that means you folks that are listening in Texas, for example, in Rochester, New York, and over into Ontario, you can get a shortwave radio and listen to us 7 days a week. 8 p.m. to midnight West Coast time. 10 p.m. to 2 a.m. Texas time. 11 p.m. to 3 a.m. East Coast time. 7 days a week, 365 days out of the year. Now, if you are listening because of the teaching, go buy yourself a shortwave radio and tune us in on the 31-meter band, 9785, every single night, anywhere in these United States, Mexico, the Caribbean, and Point South, and Canada. Beginning a week from tomorrow night, about 8 p.m. Israeli time, we'll be coming off the slopes of Mount Hermon, that towering mountain on the border of Israel and Lebanon and Syria. Mount Hermon, 6280 shortwave, 106.7 FM, 945 AM. And, of course, all over the Caribbean and the East Coast and many parts of the United States, you can hear us on that marvelous clear channel station off the Isle of Anguilla, British West Indies. Stay out there in the Leeward Islands above Guadeloupe and Martinique and to the right of Puerto Rico. Probably that little unnamed island there is Anguilla. All over the Caribbean, but also most of the United States, down into Central America, clear over to the west coast of Europe. 1610 AM, clear channel station is booming out off of Anguilla as part of the Caribbean beacon. You're not limited to television. You can pick up 24 hours a day off Westar 5 Transponder 1X if you have a satellite dish. And some of you watch us on Sunday night from a different satellite transponder that links us up with some of the stations in Texas. But 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, we have our own transponder we broadcast off of, Westar 5 Transponder 1X. You're not limited to Sunday night only. If you're interested in the teaching, get yourself a shortwave radio and pick us up every day, every night. You know, I hear a lot about, well, Kuwait was part of Iraq in the first place. Well, Iraq and Kuwait both were part of Turkey. America was once owned by the Indians, though they couldn't agree on which one of them owned what. And from the Himalayas to Egypt, it was all once the kingdom of David. There's just a lot of silly rationales being peddled. The same breakup of the Ottoman Turkish Empire and the dividing up of the mandates and the same map-drawing hands in principle produced the boundaries of Iraq and Kuwait. But that argument, then, Iraq's part of Kuwait. What's good for the goose is good for the gander. And there is a lot of talk by the Iraqis who've anointed themselves as the leaders of the Muslim world now. Well, Egypt's got a lot more Muslims in it than Iraq. And they're on the side of the coalition. Syria's got about as many Muslims as Iraq. And Syria hasn't joined Iraq yet. Arabia's not only got a lot of Muslims, it's got the holy places. In Saudi Arabia. Iran's got just as many Muslims as Iraq. They're not part of Iraq's current position. They're waiting to see what they can reap as benefits from the fallout. Bangladesh got an awful lot of Muslims. It's not on Iraq's side. India's got a lot of Muslims. It's not on Iraq's side. America's got a lot of Muslims. Not on Iraq's side. Russia's got a lot of Muslims. It's against Iraq. Philippines got a lot of Muslims. They're not on Iraq's side. I mean, you let anybody from the American frame of reference say anything that cannot be sifted five ways from Sunday and proven true, the media will butcher it. And if they can't butcher the person giving the information, they'll butcher it as an after-fact commentary. But uncritically, they let the Iraqi foreign minister in France run off at the mouth about some 200 or 300 million Muslims around the world that will rally to Iraq's side. Well, the Muslims have not been noted for unity. And this is a crock. They're about as divided as Christianity. Once Muhammad died, receiving his vision some 7 centuries after Christ, they started fighting immediately, just like Christians. Fighting over whether a blood relative of Muhammad should lead the Muslim faith, or whether someone else should receive the mantle of leadership for other reasons, and not necessarily related to Muhammad. And this division persisted, producing bloodbaths between themselves in vying for leadership, ultimately splitting the Muslims smack dab down the middle between the Shiites and the Sunnis. The Shiites are the fundamentalists, and they believe in a theocracy. The religious mullahs and the ayatollahs and the holy men in religious leadership who lead the church must dominate the secular government in the same way that the Roman Catholic Church dominated secular kings receiving their blessing or coronation or crowning during the Middle Ages. The Sunni, except in some way a separation of church and state to the degree that the government is secular-oriented and not dominated by the religious priesthood, for want of a better word, the mullahs and ayatollahs. The Shiites are fanatically fundamentalists. They believe in a series of imams, spiritual leaders that must be listened to in all dimensions of life, who dominate the political and the educational and the personal as well as the religious. They believe in a hidden iman who is somewhere on the earth that will come forth, much in the frame of reference by analogy of the coming Messiah, except that he will be on the earth for some time, not recognized, and then display himself. And all the ayatollahs are, in a sense, but a manifestation of that quality that is personified, incarnate in the imams. And the war between Iran and Iraq, from which the dust has hardly settled, was a holy war by the fundamentalist Shiites in the religious-dominated government of Iran against Iraq, calling for a revolution in Iraq where the fundamentalist Shiites would throw Saddam and his secular crowd out. King Hussein in Jordan does trace his lineage with a blood link up to Muhammad, which explains some of his populist appeal among the fundamentalists, though his lifestyle hardly measures up to it. And in Lebanon, you have an embryonic crucible of what's been going on in the Muslim world for centuries on a larger scale. Muslims of various types fighting with each other, ultimately put down by the power of Syria when the power of Israel withdrew. It's a fallacy to assume there's going to be some worldwide Muslim terrorist outbreak. There will only be a worldwide terrorist outbreak because Saddam is harboring them in Baghdad. It has about as much real religious basis on which all Muslims would agree as the Inquisition of the Middle Ages is a unifying principle of all Christians. I'm just tired of the media's. I don't even think they're stupid. I think they're deliberately trying to brainwash us. And part of their problem is they have nominated themselves the leaders of the world. They are prideful egomaniacs who believe that in every home, every night, they are your spiritual father, your teacher, your ideal, your hero, your thought maker, your value maker, the judge and jury of all mankind. And they're drunk with that power of sitting in your living room and making you think what you should think because they tell you to think that. They have nominated themselves the heroes. They have established a hero worship of themselves by their definition. Now, war, I mean, number one, the anchors ain't anxious to get out there where the poison gas might flow. In war, there are going to be some new heroes. They won't be worshipped nightly at their shrine. The way they are in peacetime, and they certainly won't be worshipped at their shrine without some risk. So they want to stand afar off and eliminate the value and the heroism and the principles involved in this stand taken against evil. And they'll do anything to distort facts and to brainwash you and, in the name of truth, distort truth. And they do it in subtle ways as well as direct ways. I can't remember when I've seen a news commentary or newscast end with the credits rolling without the credits rolling over some peace protest. Subtle ways of leaving that as their last message. I resent the brainwashing. I told you to keep calling. Why are you not calling? Told you to answer the phone, didn't I? Yes, sir. You know, there's been someone wanting to do an article on me for some time in a national magazine. I get so disturbed. This is why I don't grant interviews. They're always so dated. I mean, they're still talking about people watching me because I wear different hats. Well, if that's the only reason you watch, how come you aren't calling? Because there ain't no hat on tonight. You're complaining about hats. Now that I got you calling, I'm going to start talking again. And see how fast you quit calling. There is not unity among the Muslims. There are dedicated, loyal American Arabs all over this nation, devoted in their worship of Allah, scholars who study the better contributions of Muhammad. Indeed, I've always been in debt that when I first studied medieval history, gaining my undergraduate major in history, I had a professor wise enough to break the mold that studied medieval history centered in Rome, and he taught it with Byzantium, Constantinople, as its center, and gave the credit that Arab thought provided to the opening of the Renaissance. Without the Protestant Reformation and the Arabs, there wouldn't have been any Renaissance, period. And there are dedicated American-born Arabs, dedicated in their Muslim faith, that would never think of terrorism. They have no respect for Saddam at all. Saddam was not a fundamentalist Muslim, and the Muslims know that. He never gave a ring-a-ding for the Palestinians. Not once did he ever step forward to do anything for the Palestinians. If he had, there wouldn't be so many of them congested in Jordan. He was a Sunni. If he was anything, he's primarily a worshiper of Saddam. But his government was secular Sunni. The Iranians knew that, which is why they sought a rebellion among the Shiites to overthrow Saddam Hussein. His current nomination of himself as the leader of the Muslims is more of his own miscalculation and idiocy and an identification of convenience. Any true dedicated Muslim would have no respect for him, knowing that he's only joined that particular identity as a current way of taking the heat off of his slaughter of the Muslims in Kuwait. You're not going to hear anybody in the news media challenging one of their secular foreign ministers living high on the hog in Paris or Washington for the truth of their proclamations and the absolute absence in history of anything that can verify their current claims. The Muslim religion has practiced holy war, jihad. And there have been honest holy wars in the history, wrong but honest, in the history of genuine, dedicated Muslims. They converted with the sword or destroyed. But any dedicated Muslim knows that Saddam Hussein ain't carrying on a jihad. He's adopting jihad as another means of gaining popular support. And then the media, uncritically, I saw on the weekend, lets checkerboard head, the PLO leader, to hell's his name, Arafat. I mean, I want to puke when I look at him. I mean, you know, I got enough of, hero respect in me that, I understand why he wears that checkerboard. What I see of his head is so ugly, he should be a woman so he can cover up more. This little murdering son of Belial, they're giving him a platform to talk peace. Not one critical word. I mean, the same media that destroys Gary Hart for a piddling little two-bit sexual dalliance. I mean, that fluff he was with has really endured in permanent contributions to the history of America, hadn't she? I mean, by them brains figure out that she wouldn't last even with Gary Hart. I mean, they like the Kennedys, so, you know, he can treat sex as a swim through the pool. Somebody they don't like, they get real holy about sex. No double entendres intended. But they're hypocrites. I mean, there ought to be protests in the streets against the media, not against the war. You're safer with poison gas. You can put a mask on. You can't escape the media. Now, this little checkerboard head talking war, I mean talking peace, without one person saying, "Hey, when did you get converted?" I mean, with a history like yours, how long have you practiced to shape the word in your mouth? But no, they sit there like the media with all of these lying, change their colors every day, ruthless, self-serving, murdering imbeciles. The media sits there when they talk and says, "Ah, so." But some civilized person that won't shoot you when you turn your back, they get real brave and rip them to 1,000 pieces when they talk. If they make the slightest mistake in reporting the facts. The Muslims are not united, and they're sure as hell not united behind Saddam. So quit letting the media fill your home with garbage. Why don't you set your TV in a tub and go buy some cream pies? And at 6 o'clock tomorrow night or 8:30 in the morning, sit there and cathart. I mean, you know, maybe $10. I'll give you a dispensation. Take that out of your tithe. Go buy $10 worth of pies and just sit there. And here comes those grinning couples. You always have to have couples. I don't know who's copying who, TV evangelists or the news. But here come the couples. You wake up in the morning to these couples. Just sit there and say, this one's for NBC. Splat! See if you can get them both. Catch a picture when they're both there. Then turn it over to the other network. Then when you've got all that catharsis, turn me on and learn something. I'm sick of the media. You figured that out?
Yes, sir.
I'm sick of them peddling in the name of truth. One or the other, supreme ignorance or supreme lying. Because the facts are not as they report them. Now, if you agree, you probably want to talk to me. If you disagree, you probably want to talk to me too, but you're not going to get to. So get on the telephone.